Welcome to Bat Yard's Finest, bringing you the finest of Batman and Superman in pop culture. From Metropolis, I'm Josh from Bat Yard Productions.
And I'm Leigh, all the way from the mysterious island of Themyscira. Today we are interviewing Steve Ruffbacker, illustrator extraordinaire. Steve, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm a freelance illustrator from Poughkeepsie, New York. I'm really into comic books and horror movies, so a lot of my work kind of revolves around that. So really love horror movies. I've actually been putting together a small collection over the past few months and getting ready to watch a bunch of them now.
Oh, nice. Do you, what's the next film on your list?
Probably Cannibal Holocaust, actually.
Okay. I heard mixed things about that movie. I've never seen it.
It's Cannibal Holocaust, is one of those movies that I think I've seen probably 90% of it in like chunks, but never actually sat through it in its entirety.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Right, right. It's like one of those films you kind of follow on TV.
Yeah. It's like you're sitting on the couch and you flip around the TV and there's a movie on and you catch it from that point and then you go do something else and then it's over when you go back to it and then you catch it again at a different point when the next time it's on.
Right, exactly. Well, that's cool. I'm trying to compile a list of movies myself. I've been showing Leigh a lot of new stuff, so we're trying to branch out a little bit. So if you have any movie recommendations, we'll totally more than open.
Actually, I highly recommend the Shudder app.
Oh, right, that's that horror movie app, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And they're constantly updating it. It's a great app. I finally saw One Cut of the Dead. I don't know if you've heard of that. It just came out it's in the last year.
Is that the documentary or
it's I don't want to give it away.
Okay.
It's like a found footage thing.
Right.
But if I explain any further than that, it gives it away. It's really good. Like if the first 30 minutes, if it doesn't have you, you probably won't watch it, but trust me when I say just hang on, just wait past the 30 minute mark and it's worth it.
Okay. All right. I'll definitely take a look at it for sure. this actually isn't our first time we interviewed you. Leigh, who's right next to me, I'm like hand gesturing to her. Like, she's the one who interviewed you at Hudson Valley Comic Con in the video "Wonder Woman Travels to Hudson Valley Comic Con." If you're,
yes, no, I remember that. I actually next time the convention rolls around, or I'll mail it to you. I actually did a drawing of you guys. I'm assuming you were dressed as Bane.
Oh no, that was my buddy Matt. He's kind of the camera guy. He's the guy behind the guy.
Gotcha. Okay. So I have a drawing of Bane and Wonder Woman somewhere that I need to give you guys.
Oh, I'd love to see that. That's
awesome. I tried finding you guys at like near the end of the convention. I guess you guys had like wrapped up and left already. I was like, see him again.
Oh well, thanks for the info. You know, yeah, we had no idea. that's great.
Yeah, we kind of, at that point, we kind of split up the team and, you know, who else can we interview? Who else? So, oh, that's awesome. Thank you so much.
No, no problem.
Yeah, I was kind of manning the booth that whole day. I think I was dressed up as Clark Kent. So,
gotcha.
You might have saw me around. I don't know. But, yeah,
Leo might have been changing into Superman.
Yeah, Leo was the one making the move. So, it was kind of.
Conventions, I learned very quickly, are very, very emotionally and mentally draining. They're kind of like a time warp. We start them early and you think like, oh my God, it's never going to end. And next thing you know, it's like, all right, we're wrapping up. And you're like, what?
Yeah.
And you're just so tired and the sun's still out depending on the time of the year. But
yeah, for Hudson Valley, it's like, I mean, it would have been this past month. in May while when we're recording this. And it's such a weird feeling when you're indoors for like, I don't know, like 12 hours when it's like the day is so beautiful out, and then you come outside and you're like, oh, there's sunshine that exists, you know.
And
you
kind of miss out. There's life outside of this arena.
And I don't know about you guys, but it was exceptionally weird for me, considering like we're in a place that we're in a field house there, and we were on fake grass. So like you have all this beautiful sunshine coming in, and I see like what looks like grass in front of me. So I have this weird outdoor vibe, but
it almost feels like you're in the Truman Show or something. Everything's kind of artificial, not really there.
Yes,
you know.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a weird experience, especially the very first time I ever did it.
Yeah, well, how many years have you done conventions? Was Hudson Valley your first one, or you have
this would have been my third year doing Hudson Valley. Technically, it still will be when it gets rescheduled, but.
Fingers crossed.
All fingers crossed. But this year would have been the year I had planned on doing like a whole bunch of conventions. Like I had planned on doing one in Connecticut. I planned on doing New Jersey Horror Con in late March, which has now been moved to September. That I'm still going to do that one, and a few others. Here and there, in the local area too. But you know, current events would have everything, you know, postponed.
Oh yeah, for sure. So, were you planning on manning a booth at all these conventions, or were you kind of going to some just kind of visit and kind of get the scope?
Oh no, I planned on having a booth at all of them.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, it's a bit, bittersweet, I guess, because like over the winter and everything like that, I had been amassing a bunch of new art prints and buttons and stickers and stuff to sell. I mean, like, I still sell them on like my Etsy store, but like I really wanted to have them at like the conventions for people.
Yeah,
and then that gets yanked down out from underneath you. So that was like a shock to the gut, but. It's given me time to just make more new original art.
Yeah, what's nice about it is at least it gives you a little more prep time. That's kind of how I saw it as with the Hudson Valley, how they postponed it. I was like, all right, so we'll have a little more time to kind of figure out what we exactly want to do. But yeah, I totally know what you mean, especially if you spend all this on items that you want to sell out to the public.
Oh, I designed like a new banner and like tablecloth covering and like,
oh, cool,
the whole nine. Cause I was like doing research on like the best way to like approach, like setting up a vendor table and stuff like that. And I get all this cool stuff. And then they're like, nah, you just put that shit away.
Yeah. Do you usually man the booth by yourself, or do you kind of have like someone who helps you out? Like how does that?
I do. My wife, accompanies me. She's also a big comic book and horror movie fanatic, and she's really good with numbers. She's an accountant. I went to summer school twice for math, so it's good to have her helping me out with stuff.
Oh, yeah. Math is definitely my weak subject, for sure.
Oh, gosh.
Well, that's cool. Well, shout out to your wife. Can we say her name, or...
Oh, yeah, her name's Courtney.
Courtney. Woo, all right. Courtney! Yeah, round of applause for Courtney. Thank you. Well, that's awesome. Well, that's cool that you guys got, like, your own little team going on with that. You know, I know manning a booth, like, we were talking to another artist on a previous podcast episode called JB Entertaining.
Yes.
He...
I have that one.
Oh, yeah. Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, he kind of mans the booth all by himself. I would be so overwhelmed if it was just me. You know, I don't know.
It's very overwhelming. I mean, all the credit to the people that do it by themselves for whatever they're selling or doing. I would lose my mind.
I 100%
when we went last year, we had a whole team of people, and I feel like that, you know, towards the other end was overwhelming, because it's okay, you know, when are you going to go eat? Okay, when are you going to go eat? All right, you got to go to the bathroom, okay? You know, you
just I think we kind of talked about that in our interview at the con, like, yeah, the whole getting up and trying to figure out, like, who has to eat, who has to go to the bathroom, like, it becomes a struggle.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, the good thing about, like, having a lot larger team is that you kind of can rotate your crew kind of in and out, like, say, you know, someone needs to go to the bathroom. But if you're by yourself, you're kind of stuck. Like, I don't know what you do. You can't just...
You wear a diaper.
Yeah, I guess so.
God. Like... You wear a diaper,
I don't
know. or you fast or something. I don't know.
Survive that long.
Yeah.
In a diaper?
Yeah. I don't know if you'll track many customers too with that kind of stench. You know.
Nobody.
Eh, there's some weirdos out there. You never know.
Yeah. I guess you Febreze it. No one would notice.
Anyway.
So, what was your first convention that you started selling your own personal items at?
Hudson Valley, actually. 3 years ago.
Oh, okay, awesome.
Yeah. I wanted to start local,
mm-hmm.
I actually had planned on doing the second one, or rather, I didn't plan to. It was recommended to me, and I just wasn't. I personally didn't feel like I was ready to do it. Like, the idea was there, but I'm just like, I need a little bit more stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I just didn't feel that the stuff I had done at that time was up to par, you know?
Right.
No. So was Hudson Valley your first Comic-Con ever, or just your first one that you were
selling? No, just the first one I've ever sold stuff at. What? My first convention was I think it was New York Comic-Con in 05 or 06? Yeah. I think it was 06. That was the first one I had ever gone to.
What was your first impression?
Oh, geez. It was, it was crazy. Like, I'd never seen so much stuff. I had never, like, not being one that, like, goes down to the city too often, just, you know, just going down to the city was a trip in itself. And then you're there, it's like early in the morning, you're waiting for everything to open up, you see like you're standing there by the Javits Center and like you're tired, like you see a stormtrooper walk down the street and you're like, what the fuck? All right. Like, but it was cool, like it was a great experience, but it was also a for me personally, it was also kind of a bad experience. I had a couple not so great experiences with a couple professional comic book artists. Like, they were kind of really jerks, to put it politely. And it really turned me off to conventions for a little bit. It actually turned me off to even doing comic book art. Like, I'm fresh out of high school. Like, that's what I originally thought I wanted to do, and like they were just like kind of mean about some stuff, and I was just like, all right, I don't think I want to have anything to do with that. So it put a sour taste in my mouth. But since then, like, every other convention I've ever gone to has been great.
Without mentioning any names, what was kind of like that, what was that experience that you had at that first New York Comic Con that gave you bad taste? Like, it, I mean, you don't have to say too much about it, but if you know,
oh, it, I was a young kid fresh out of high school with some art that I wanted to, like, a little portfolio of stuff that I had done that I wanted to just have looked at by professional artists and get some constructive criticism. And while I did get some really positive constructive criticism, the overall negativity that a few people gave me, it was like, it hurt. One of them I could tell, like, he was just like, he was old and cranky and he was just saying stuff to be mean. Mm-hmm. And I'm,
oh,
I'm like, all right, you know, that sucked.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know,
it was like almost like don't meet your heroes kind of scenario.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Don't. I mean, in some regards, don't. But other times, like I've had other great experiences. Like I like one of my heroes is Joe Bob Briggs, the horror host, and I've met him twice, and he's a wonderful human being. You know, like he's great. Ask him any question, he'll answer it. You can just have a conversation with him about anything. You know,
where did you meet him? Was that at New York Comic Con as well?
No, I met him. I met him at New Jersey Comic Con of 2019, and then another time I went to go see his one man show called "How Rednecks Saved Hollywood."
Oh,
recently, yeah. Really funny.
Yeah, we actually haven't had the chance to go to New York Comic Con. We've been to some bigger ones like Boston and there was one in Rhode Island, but like those are not like small scale compared to New York. And I just hear it's getting more and more crowded, you know, as it goes on. So that's almost deterred me from going at the same time. You know, like
I will. a buddy of mine went to this really small convention in Saratoga, New York. We were up there. We didn't even know there was a convention going on. We were just up there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all right, cool, let's go.
Just circumstance.
just random circumstance. And we're walking around, and it was just this weirdest thing. Like, this dude sitting at a table just looks at us and leans over the table and is like, hey, you guys. And we're like, yeah. And he's like, you guys like werewolves? And we're like, what?
Sure.
Like,
yeah.
You guys into werewolves? And I'm like, I gotta go do a thing. Like, I don't got time to chat you up about werewolves or whatever. Like, not into whatever you're trying to sell me, man.
That's just kind of a weird way to instigate conversation, you know?
It's real weird.
Yeah.
You do you. I'm gonna go far away.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds like a start to a werewolf movie. You know?
Hey, come here. I'll show you my werewolf. Yeah. Oh man! So you said your favorite movie genre was horror,
mm-hmm.
and most of your work is geared around horror. Do you? I mean, because you meet so many different people at cons, do you connect with other horror enthusiasts? You know, do you seek them out, or do you is it just kind of you meet whoever you can meet?
I'll meet whoever. I mean, It was never my overall intention to be like, I'm gonna do horror art, like, and I just noticed that like all the comic book art that I was doing at the time, especially with like a bunch of like comic book sketch covers and stuff like that,
mm-hmm.
I was adding some type of weird and like twisted, demented element to it. One that comes to mind, it was a issue of Ant-Man, and I went full Cronenberg with it, and just I mixed an ant with a man, and it, you know, I just drew it as grotesque as I possibly could, and I'm like I don't know if anybody's gonna want this, but you know, here it goes. And I think somebody bought it actually.
Yeah. almost like your version of the fly.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, when it comes to art, you know, ask any serious artist, I guess, like most people like paint or draw what they're feeling. And, you know, if you don't get that poison out of you, you know, you just let it build up. So sometimes when I actually like paint, you know, it comes out as kind of a little dark and grotesque. And you know, I, you know, just liking horror movies and comic books, you know, I try to make things fun at the same time too. Like, I've got a bunch of, you know, goofy kid friendly stuff too. Like, I'm not opposed to like good design, You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, so I try and connect with anybody. If I can catch your eye and, you know, make you go, oh God, or if it can make you laugh, you know, that's all I want to do. I just want to make you feel something.
So you said you do some painting. Do you have a preference to drawing versus painting, or kind of depends on your mood?
So I don't know where I heard the phrase, but once I heard it, I couldn't get it out of my head. I like to work what's called tradigitally, which, you know, traditional digital. So a lot of my, you know, digital artwork, I'll try and incorporate traditional aspects into it in terms of like actual painting, like the way it's painted and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And conversely, a bunch of like usually when I paint traditionally, I paint in watercolor and gouache. Like that's my favorite medium. One thing I learned, because, you know, time is of the essence sometimes. We don't always have time. I learned this technique from the comic book artist Kevin Cross. He would do a bunch of his preliminary sketches for his books completely digital. And then he would print them out on Bristol board. And then from there, he would do all of his inking and stuff like that. So he would never actually draw on Bristol board. So I was like, oh, I like that. So what I would do sometimes for my small paintings and stuff, if I have a specific idea in mind, I'll do it digitally. I'll do the line work digitally, and then I'll print that out, and then I'll essentially like ink it on the watercolor paper, and then just do the painting from there. That way it saves me the time of not potentially, you know, screwing up the paper with, you know, drawing and erasing and stuff like that. And that way I can get my line work you know, spot on with it.
How do you, when you say you draw it digitally, what do you use? Do you draw it on like an iPad or?
So I do draw on an iPad, on an iPad Pro. I use Procreate with an Apple Pencil. That thing's a wonder. Like I almost treat that as my sketchbook, but I've done full on drawings on that thing that I've sold, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But mostly I'll do my work on my desktop computer. I have a tablet monitor that I draw on that way. So, and I'll bounce back and forth between Photoshop and Clip Studio Paint. I don't know, Mangus, whatever the name is. I think it's Clip Studio now. But I bounce back and forth between those two programs when I do digital work.
When you do your digital, do you sketch it out physically and then draw digital, like color it in digitally after that and ink it after? Or is it like
I'll do the sketching digital. I'll do the inking digital. I'll do the coloring and all that digital. Once in a while, like rarely, I'll have doodled something on an actual piece of paper and be like, ah, I kind of like that. And I'll take a well-lit photo of it and I'll email it to myself and I'll open it up in, you know, in Photoshop or whatever and clean it up that way and work through the process again, just, you know, that way.
Yeah, I would see how it is easier in digital to sketch, because, you know, if you do mess it up, you just hit undo and you know, fix it. It's not as messy.
Control Z, man.
Yeah.
actual drawing doesn't have Control Z, so there's like a lot of pressure. So I'm like, but even with my actual traditional work, when I'm done with it, and if it's something that I like, and I'm like, I think that would make a good print, I'll scan that into the computer and touch it up digitally, before I have it printed. So there's always some type of crossplay between digital and traditional paper and stuff like that.
Yeah, I gotta say, like how you're talking about before, like your artwork kind of is like comedic and horror, you know, at the same time. They
go hand in hand. Comedy and horror go hand in hand.
Yeah, exactly. I think the best example of that is Dead series, especially Evil Dead 2. I love that. Like, it's just
that is one of my favorite franchises. I, you know, it's funny. I was cleaning up a bunch of stuff before, and I was going through one of my comic boxes to sort through, and I found a stack of Evil Dead comics that, like, I'm like, oh my god, I forgot I had these on a pull list, and like, I need to read these, like, Kiss versus Army of Darkness. I'm like, oh yeah, I got that. just a fat stack of Army of Darkness comic books and stuff.
Yeah, I read Army of Darkness versus Marvel Zombies. That was pretty good. I don't know if you
read. Yes. Yeah, I did read that.
Yeah, that was a fun time.
Yeah.
I have to reread that. Somehow it got kind of lost in my collection. I could find it again, but I wanted to ask you with Evil Dead, it looks like you found an Evil Dead cabin, like on your Instagram, like you
I don't know what it was. I was at right before everything really went sideways with the quarantine and everything like that. I was I go to Baird Park all the time, And I was hiking and like through the woods, like off trail and stuff like that. And I stumbled upon it, and I'm like, "What is that?" And then I didn't have my stuff with me at the time, so I'm like, "I'm coming back here tomorrow." And I'm like, "That looks like a fun thing to kind of go through and paint." And it was just, I don't know if it was just like an old field house. But I mean, like, it looked like you could live in it. It looked like a cabin, like a 1 to 2 person cabin, on the grounds there. So, I don't know, it was weird.
I mean, it looks pretty spot on.
Yeah, it does. Mm-hmm. It really does. Is Bear Park, that's located in Poughkeepsie?
Yeah, right in LaGrange, right off Route 55.
Okay.
I don't know where you guys I know you guys are fairly local. I don't know where you guys are actually from.
Yeah, I'm originally from Poughkeepsie, and I never even heard of Bear Park, so that's why I'm like, what? There's a
It's right off
my backyard.
It's right off the Taconic, yeah.
Okay. I have to go here. Like after I saw this, I was like, wow. You know, I definitely, you know, that's really cool that you found that.
Yeah, it just made me want to go off trail more and try and find other things.
Do you go hiking a lot? Is that kind of how you get some inspiration for your art pieces? Like,
yeah, I honestly usually stick to Baird because it's down the road from me. I live 5 minutes away from it, so it's right there for me. Mm-hmm. But I usually get a lot of my ideas or things when I'm either hiking or honestly doing some form of exercise, actually.
Yeah.
Like in the mornings, I'll work out, and I have a laptop on my table and a notebook next to it. And if I get some weird idea, I'll jot it down while I'm working out. I find or if I'm running, I'll shout something into my phone to, you know, remind me when I get back to my car. I've just found, you know, that exercise or some type of physical activity that produces endorphins helps with the creative process. And I usually do it in the morning because that's when you usually have your most creative ideas, or so I'm told. I don't read.
So I'm gonna say that's how you stay motivated with your artwork, is through exercise and kind of being productive that way.
I gotta keep moving. Mm-hmm. If I sit, I stagnate, and my mind will eat itself. Like,
yeah.
you know, but sometimes I'll wake up in the middle of the night with an idea and I'll have to, like,
jot it down or something.
Yeah,
that's how my brain works too. Like, once I get active and moving and working out, that's kind of when I get my best ideas. So I 100% agree with
everything. when you're sitting there in a funk, it, you know, nothing's moving. You're not, you know.
Yeah, you get lost in your own sauce almost.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's when you start going down the rabbit hole.
Yeah. Well, that's really cool. Do you usually keep a sketch pad with you when you're, going through Bear Park, or?
No. It's funny. Whenever I see something, you know, I want to draw, like, I should have brought something to either sketch or draw. Mm-hmm. Sometimes if that situation, if it's really something that I'll want to do, I'll take a photo. I'll try and take the best photo I possibly can on my phone. Right. I know I'm not going to be back there the next day or whatever like that, and just try and work from that kind of reference.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, once in a while I do it. Once in a while I'll get a bug up my butt and, like, yeah, go draw people at the mall in the food court, you know, and, you know, I'll do that, and just get people eating. It's gross, but, you know.
Yeah.
Some of those can be pretty scary and comical.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Nothing like watching an 86-year-old woman try and eat Chinese food at, like, 10 a.m.
No.
Yeah, that's almost going to, like, a human zoo, you know, your people watching the food court.
That was one thing I used to do quite a bit. I actually like to go to the mall earlier in the day and see the, like, no sane person goes to the mall that early in the morning. Like, that's where you see, like, some real weird stuff. at least that's been my luck. So, like, I would like to go to the mall and just walk around and just people watch.
Mm-hmm.
Just sit through court and sketch some once in a while and just watch people. Well, and do their own thing. Like, people are weird, man.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And it's actually a good way to get exercise. Like, I know people just walk around, actually. So.
Yeah, the mall walkers. I used to work in the mall when I was younger. And Sunday mornings, man, if I had to open up, the mall walkers, man, they'd be there with their little white shoes on, just walking the mall before all the stores opened up.
Oh,
yeah. What the mall I used to live near, they actually put markers on the floor so you would know, like, when you hit a mile.
That's not a bad idea. I think regular people could use that. Like, yeah. I never not going
before.
Yeah, I started paying attention to it because my grandparents. Oh, and they'd be like, what'd you do? Oh, we walked around the mall. We did 2 miles. How do you know? Well, they put the things on the floor. Okay.
Yeah, now for me, it's just like, I'll think I get a text message, and it's just my phone. And it's like, hey, good job, fatty. You walked further than you did yesterday. I'm like, oh, okay.
Oh, my God.
That's how I feel about my Fitbit. It's like, yay, you hit the minimum for activity.
Yeah, I mean, especially now with this whole, you know, pandemic, it's harder for me to get motivated to actually kind of move around and work out.
Yeah, we've had to get real creative with the exercise.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, yeah, it's a little, it can be a little difficult if you don't, like, have equipment already at home.
Mm-hmm.
But even then, like, it's... Like anything that's good for you, it's like a band-aid, and you just gotta rip the goddamn thing off and just do it.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Like for me, it's not an issue to do it. It's getting up early to do it. I want to get up early and not get it over with, but I want to do it early in the morning. That way, I have plenty of time to do other things throughout the day. And trying to get out of bed, man, sometimes it's just it's hard. Sometimes I have to literally throw myself out of bed to get up.
Oh yeah. That's how I
But the for motivation, it's like, you know, especially with what's going on, you know, I've been trying to think of it as like, you're not always going to have this much amount of, you know, free time, for lack of a better word, because for, you know, unfortunately for a lot of people, it's not, you know, it's not a vacation, you know, like, it sucks right now.
Yeah, a lot of times, you know, I'll be sitting doing something, and then it'll kind of, all of a sudden come back at once, like, this is what our scenario is right now, like, what we're living through.
It's really thrown a wrench into everybody's gears, and you know, I've been trying, like a lot of people, just to try and utilize it as best I can. Mm-hmm.
It's actually the time, like, to utilize it for artists, especially because you have all this free time. Like, say you couldn't get to this one project that you wanted to because you didn't have enough time. Now you almost have more than enough time. It's just kind of utilizing it for your own.
Yeah. Now it's a matter of learning how to prioritize time better. You know, I've got 12 hours in a day, essentially. Like, how am I gonna do this? You know, but I've had days where, you know, I've been in front of my computer working for 12 hours straight on something, and like I just go cross-eyed, and I get up from it because, you know, you got to sleep at some point, and it's just like, if I look at this thing for 1 second longer, I'm gonna lose my mind. Like I have, when it comes to doing something for a client that's, you know, that's paying money for a commission, I will pull all nighters for them. You know, I will work till it gets done to, you know, the way they like it. But when it's like stuff for me, like I'll unfortunately like work 12 hours on it because I'm like really into the idea. And then the next day I'll be like, I ain't touching that for like the next 2 days. Like, I'm not doing it. Like, I'll take a break from drawing or painting for like 2-3 days at a time. I won't do it. Which has both good and bad properties to it. The pros, and this is from a personal standpoint, these pros and cons. The pros being, I'm looking at something, I'm with brand new eyes again. I'll see errors in something that I can change. You know, I have a clear head now. The cons are, you know, sometimes I don't know if the correct word for it is, but like maybe it's just a mental thing I do to myself. I'll make myself think that like I've accumulated some type of amount of rust in my skills within like the 48 hours I take off. Like if it's all like, you know, Saturday and Sunday, I don't do anything. Like come Monday morning, I'll be like, I don't know how to draw a circle. And I'll spend the next like 45 minutes warming up, like just drawing circles and like, you know, making sure I can draw the best goddamn circle I can. Like, no, you can do this. You're not a hack. You're not a fraud. No, you can draw a circle. Like, you know, that's the con side of it, at least for me.
Well, it's like, you know, the mentality of if you don't use it, you lose it.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't know if I necessarily believe that, because I know people that have never had a desire to do art to like any type of like professional capacity, and they don't do it in their spare time. They don't, you know, what, it's not fun for them, but they can outdraw me. Or you know, like like no one's business. Like how? You haven't touched anything for like 3 years. How do you have that? You know what I mean? That innate ability to just draft something like that, you know?
Yeah, there's always going to be people at varying different skill levels that are doing the same thing that you're doing. As long as you keep progressing and you're bettering yourself, I think that's all that really matters. Because
no matter what direction
you look, there's going to be someone.
It's like the old adage, like if it's not fun, why do it? Like, you know,
mm-hmm.
you know, the other edge, like the second it starts to feel like work, you're doing something wrong.
Right.
Like when it comes to your passion, something that you're trying to do, like obviously, you have to put work into something to get good. But the second it feels like, goddamn, like this just isn't this isn't fun for me anymore, regardless if it's like drawing something for myself or something for another person. Like that's not something I want to do, you know, and that shouldn't just apply to me. That should apply to everybody. Like if you're stuck behind a desk and you know, you want to be doing something else, be it art related, whatever, think of it and, you know, like figure out a way to do it. There's always a way to do it, you know, especially nowadays, like, with online courses for things and like the amount of stuff I've learned off of YouTube in regards to, both traditional and digital art. I'm like, why the did I go to college? Why? Why am I in debt when I could have just gone on YouTube?
Right.
Well, that's I totally feel that right now. I'm in grad school for special ed and literacy, and you know, you learn something from being in the classroom with kids, and then you sit in the classroom and you're like, I've already known this. Because, you know, you've been teaching for however long, then you go back for your master's, and it's like, okay, I already knew that. Why am I paying thousands of dollars to be told this again?
Yeah, yeah.
And there's some great tutorials on YouTube, like you're saying. Like, you could search any topic, any situation, and you get exactly what you need to learn at the specific time that you need it. And at school, it's just kind of, they're just shoving information all at once, and you're trying to absorb what you can. It's almost, you know, it's almost physically impossible to do it all in, you know, just one sitting.
I think what you're getting at is, it's not, you know, you sit in class and you're like, all right, this doesn't apply to me right now. Mm-hmm. Like, why do I need this? It's not applicable.
Yeah, and then in like a YouTube video, like a tutorial video, like
it's what you need to know right now.
Yeah, like what you could absorb it when you need it.
It's a cut to the chase. Tell me what I need to know. Like, you know.
Right. Like, right now I'm learning, you know, how to do assessments, and yeah, it's important, but I could have also figured that out just by teaching, but too bad. No hiring right now.
Yeah. And I don't want to ever speak to, like, try and speak for everyone that's ever gone to an art school, but at least for myself and my friends that went to the same school as me, we all kind of had a similar experience where, and maybe it was just our luck with where we went at the time. Like when I got out of college, like I took the first job I could get, and, art was actually the furthest thing from my mind. I'm like, well, I'm not doing that. That was fun. Like, 'cause I just felt like it was almost beaten out of me with the way certain things were taught. And it was just like, why? Like, I almost felt like a lot of the professors were teaching me how to be an artist like them and not find my own way of doing things and like not cultivating my own skills and things like that. They were just trying to teach me how to be a mini clone of them. And I'm like, I didn't come here to be you and do things like you. I came here to find out how I need to be me and how to do things like the way I want to do them. You know what I mean? Like so it just put like, again, like, Much like the convention, like the comic book convention thing, it put like a really sour taste in my mouth for a while, and I didn't want to do anything with it.
Well, you gotta.
What's that?
You gotta like almost. You gotta create your own style, and you know what works for you, and that you know, what that makes unique. You know, and I got to say, with your art style, it definitely draws to my eye. I love. You know, you do your character designs, and I love how you have those the character designs where people are asking you, oh, you know, what character should I draw this day, and you kind of like do your.
Oh yeah, yeah. I appreciate that, and I'm actually I'm still working on. I know it was like a 6 fan arts challenge. Like I guess I'm doing a baker's dozen because I'm past 6 now. And I think I have like a solid 13 suggestions. You guys actually suggested, I believe one of your suggestions was, oh my God, sister, this is how fried my brain is today. The Creature from the Black Lagoon. I'm looking at, this is how fried my brain is. I'm looking at a poster on my wall of the Creature from the Black Lagoon. That's the drawing I did, and I'm blanking on the name.
Yeah, no, I saw it. I love how you kind of did your own design to it. Like, you know, like usually with people, they kind of do, you know, just like a copy of like what the movie would be. You almost incorporated your own kind of vision to it, and it looked, you know, obviously you could tell that it's the Creature from Black Lagoon, but it looked different. You know, like you could see that. Somewhere else.
Yeah, like if you've seen the movie Monster Squad, like, mm-hmm. like you, obviously everybody knows all the classic Universal monsters, but they don't have the rights to use the names and stuff like that. And they call him the Gill Man in, I believe, that one. Oh, and he looks vastly different than the original, you know, Creature from the Black Lagoon. But you see that. That form, that look, and you're like Creature from the Black Lagoon. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, that's the first thing you think of. It's just like,
yeah, you know. That one was fun to do because I love the Creature from the Black Lagoon, but I looked at a lot of because you know the ocean's creepy. You know, oh. I hate the ocean. It's just we know so little about a lot of it, and it's just creepy. And I was looking at a lot of like deep sea, like abyssal level fish, and they are just like the things of nightmares. And you know, why not use some of that in there? Like one of the. I know it's, you know, you're looking at it on your phone, so, you know, it's smaller, but if you blow the picture up, like, on a screen, like one thing I wanted to try and do with, like, the teeth is, like, make the teeth, a lot of deep-sea fish, their teeth are almost, like, translucent, like, you can kind of see through them, and, yeah. like, it's something, and they're, like, needles, they're just creepy. You know, instead of just using like big fangs and stuff like that, let's like it's almost like surgical needles, and it's just ugh.
Oh yeah,
everybody's like angler fish. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize until I started like looking into it. You know, you see photos of angler fish, and you think they're like tiny. They're gigantic.
Every time I think of an angler fish, I think of the part in Finding Nemo when they're getting.
They're huge.
Okay, that
makes them even more terrifying.
How big are they? Are they like half the like? I didn't realize they're that big.
Like a small sofa.
Oh really? Oh my god!
Yeah, like a love seat. They're gigantic.
Oh my god!
Yeah,
characters at all. I thought it would be like the size of my head or something like that. You know,
like, right? Like, oh, it's creepy, but it's tiny. I could fight that. No, whoa, this thing's a small sofa.
It can get. I mean, I see 70 pounds right here, but that sounds a lot bigger than 70 pounds.
Yeah.
Like they.
Well, it's like tuna fish. You open up a can of tuna fish, and you think of fish, and they're tiny. Tunas are gigantic.
Oh yeah, tunas are huge. You get a lot of meat.
I remember the first time I'm like, get out of here! Oh my god, they're gigantic.
Yeah. Anglerfish can be 70 pounds. Wow, that's
crazy.
Yeah. Well, like they said, fact is stranger than fiction. You know, when you do what's literally under our feet, it's insane. You know, it almost goes beyond, because it's literally right in front of you. Like,
oh yeah, the ocean is just, it's horrifying.
So I would say, like, if we go to the ocean, you would be the person who wouldn't go in the water. Are you one of those?
Yeah, I'll go in the water, but like. You know, I'll go out to a certain point, but then after that, it's like, you know, after that, that's where nature tries to murder you. And I'm like, I don't really want anything to do with that. So
yeah.
I'll walk it back.
Well, with going back to the creature, like the movie itself, you see all these underwater shots of the love interest swimming on the surface of the ocean, of the lake, I mean. And you could definitely tell that Steven Spielberg was inspired by those shots with Jaws, you know,
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Speaking of Jaws, was it on Bloody Disgusting or Fangoria.com? Was it Robert Shaw? The guy that plays Quint?
Yeah, that's Robert Shaw.
Yeah, his son looks exactly like him. You know, genetics, so yeah.
He
dressed up like Quint, and he, like, mastered his father's speech patterns and mannerisms from Jaws.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, like, a video of him on there of doing lines from Jaws and stuff like that. And it's freaking weird. like I've seen some convincing, like, deep fakes, like, not deep fake stuff, but like what they did with like Carrie Fisher in, like, Rogue One and stuff like that. This is like, it's him. Like, it's like it looks like Robert Shaw. Like, it's like Robert Shaw never died.
Yeah, no, I have seen that video. I've seen like clips and pieces off this, like, Jaws fan page on Facebook. I think that's where I first saw it. Yeah, he looks just like him. I think his name's Ian Shaw or something.
Yeah, I believe so.
But yeah, he could be in, like, the sequel, like Jaws. You know, even though Quint died, you just say
Shark. If they made a sequel today, or. Heck, if they made a prequel, they should use him as Quint. Like, if, you know what I mean? If there are flashback scenes of stuff with Quint that they can't use because, you know, it's a scene that was never filmed, just use him.
That would be the only way I would be interested in a Jaws sequel or prequel, if they actually get him to play Quint. You know, I would actually be interested in it. I haven't seen any of the Jaws sequels. I don't think I ever will, because they're all terrible, you know, so I don't...
Jaws 4 is the best one. The shark roars.
Yeah, it's like a lion.
It's the best. Michael Caine's flying a plane, and Mario Van Peebles gets eaten by this gigantic shark but doesn't die.
Yeah.
And it's irritated by a strobe light, and it roars.
They're like fighting an undersea lion or something. You know, at that
point. It's ridiculous.
What do you mean?
I just as the sequels go on, supposedly it's the same shark, but the shark keeps getting bigger.
Oh, is that what's happening? I thought it was like shark babies or something. Like, I don't know. Like,
John. I could be wrong. I'm not a Jaws aficionado, but I'm pretty sure it's supposed to be the same shark, even though it's exploded in like three of the movies.
That's worse than what I thought. I thought it was like his, like Jaws's baby, you know. But this is even worse if it's the same shark. That's all.
No, you know what it is? It could be because, you know, it blows up in the first one. Jaws 2. I think Jaws 2 is either the baby shark of Jaws 1 or it's the mother of Jaws 1, and then from there it's the same shark.
Oh no. When you say baby shark, all I could think of is that terrible baby shark.
Yeah.
That's yeah. The theme song to one of the sequels. Is that
Well, yeah, if you know, if a Jaws movie were made today, be it a sequel or a remake, they would figure out a way to have that song in there, like some kids like on their parents' phone on the beach listening to it right before they get mauled.
Yeah, I don't know. I put Jaws on such a high pedestal, I don't want it to be touched. I don't want it to be remade or redone or anything like that. That and Batman,
Jaws is such a great movie that like I can only watch that movie during the summer. Mm-hmm. I like refuse to watch it any other time because like it's like when I see Jaws come on the TV, that's how I know it's summertime. Jaws is officially on. We are in summer mode.
Oh yeah, for sure. I think it's one of the best movies to watch during the summer too.
Yeah.
I showed Leah Jaws for the first time this past year, I think. Did you enjoy it?
I sure did like it. I couldn't believe that I had never seen it, and I was like, wow, that was even better than I imagined it could be.
It made a generation of people afraid of the water. You know what I mean?
Yeah, people that water, and I guess there's a lot more shark hunts after that movie came out, so I think a lot of different species kind of went down after that movie came up. And it's not like that's what they intended to do, but it's just kind of sequential.
Oh yeah, no, I'm sure Steven Spielberg was not planning on like I'm going to put out some propaganda to get people to lower the population of saltwater fish. Like we got to get rid of them. I don't know how else to do it than to make people afraid of them.
Well, I wanted to go back to your commission work. Say you do a few commissions. Do you have like a commission that kind of pops in your head when you think of commissions? Like, what was your like? Do you have like a favorite experience of one commission in particular? Or,
I mean, I value them all, honestly, because it means. Someone came to me and saw my work and liked it enough that they're willing to give me money for my work and effort to produce something for them. So it could be, it could be something as silly as, a Twitter avatar that I've done for like, $15. Like I value everything, but one that comes to mind, that I spent a lot of time on was for it was like a blessing in disguise. It was like it was during the time when I didn't know if I wanted to do art, and how I got to it. I'm gonna get back to your point. I'm gonna Tarantino it and kind of go back in time for a second.
Okay.
Like I took that, like I said before, like I took the first job I could out of college, and I was like, I was doing a lot of desk work, and like, I was content with that. I wasn't drawing, but I was working. I was content with that. And then one day, they're like, hey, we're outsourcing your jobs to people in North Carolina, and you're going to have to teach these people how to do your job. And then you're going to be fired at the end of the month. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. So for a while, like these people from North Carolina came up and we were teaching them how to do our jobs. We were teaching our replacements. So I had like nothing to do at my desk. So I started drawing at my desk. I was just doodling. I had to kill time. Like, and I was just like, I need to do something with this. Like I'm feeling like a waste. And I'm, you know, time came, like, I'm like, I don't have a job. I need a job to make ends meet while I still do this. So I didn't immediately just do freelance stuff because I was just like, I haven't done this in a really long time. I need to reacclimate myself with drawing. And, you know, I, like I said before, I accumulated a lot of rust. So I got like a part-time job and I did that for like 3 years while doing, you know, while teaching myself. And then one day, like one morning, I got a message on my phone, like an email, and for a commission. Like, you know, I'm always wary of things like that. Like I did like 12 hours of research on this dude to like make sure like he was legit. It was for an indie game developer in Denmark, he was putting together a Kickstarter to make a horror survival, like dungeon crawler role playing game, called Small Town Thirst. And, basically I worked on that with him, doing the demo for it for two and a half years, I think. He would give me lists of everything, and it was a 3-man team. It was me, himself, and another guy doing like sound design, and I just did, my job was to do character design, level artwork, like I like icon design, like I did like all the art, like it's 2D, and I would give, like, I would segment the pieces and of the art, and I would give it to him, and he would somehow animate my art for a computer game, and it would go from there. But like I did that for quite a while. So without that, that meant a lot to me to personally to do, because like that was a lot of time, a lot of effort. Like there was a lot of drawing on the weekends, you know, when it was sunny out and stuff like that, designing characters. And it was like, because it was an area I never really dabbled in before, like characters designed for video games and things like that. And, you know, you'd come up with a character that, you know, fits, you know, the description, you know, that the programmer wants it, and now I got to go back in and like literally like segment the drawing like it was a marionette, excuse me, so he could animate it. Like, you know, I'm like, just the amount of detail and hours spent drawing like little health potions and, you know, item pickups and stuff like that, like it, like all, like I'm just, the detail I put into like floorboards for like the, you know, the stages and stuff like that. It was like, I, all the art in that is me for the most part. I think like Ben, the actual programmer, did, you know, he took my stuff and, you know, shined that turd up, you know, made it look pretty and presentable. But I did that for a long time. So I was, whether, cause, and because it's in Denmark, you know, whatever, like whether or not it succeeded or not, like, I was just happy to do it. And, you know, the responses I would get from him with how happy he was, like that's almost worth it, when to, whether it be an email or, you know, a message, or when you hear someone say how happy they are with it, that makes it worth it. That makes the, you know, the 12 hours you spent doing something, you know, coming down to the wire, you know, your eyes are bleeding, you're tired, like you want to go to bed, but you know, when you hear that the next day, like it does make it worth it to some degree.
So you did character design and background design.
Yeah, he needed an overall artist, and like it put all my skills to the test, because I drawing portraits and characters and stuff like that, like, I'm fine with, but like level design, like drawing backgrounds and stuff, like detailed backgrounds, I'm like, all right, I had to really dig deep in myself to find the creative process to like really come up with some good backgrounds and that fit his needs. So, and again, like, kind of going back to what we were talking about, like, that's where like I found like a lot of good YouTube tutorials on like how to do that, because I didn't know my ass from my elbow when it came to like certain stuff. I was just like, oh Jesus, how do we do this? And I was just like, and like it's one of those things when you realize, like, you know, because art, especially like digital art, like, not to devalue it, it's kind of like a magic trick. Like, obviously you have to have, you know, some skills to do it, but like the finer touches that really make things pop out, they're just like little stupid magic tricks that like really tie things together. And I'm like, it was that simple. Like, oh my God. Like, it was like the answers are right in front of me, and but like hidden, like a lot of stuff's hidden in plain sight. I'm like, oh, all right.
Yeah, sometimes the best techniques are the ones that are the most obvious, but they don't, you know, realize it's the most obvious.
And you know, like, again, like, backtracking to like my experiences with professional artists at comic book conventions back in the day for me at least, or you know, for a lot of people, like a lot of people I like kept that stuff, like their creative processes and how they did stuff, they would keep that stuff really close to the chest and kind of keep it secret and not share it with people. Mm-hmm. You know, which in my opinion is selfish. It's art. Like, it should be shared with everybody. And, you know, with the advent of, you know, YouTube and the digital age of everything like that, like, there are loads of people out there trying to make other artists better artists, you know, with teaching you how to do stuff. And like, there is no reason, you know, why you can't do something. Like, there is an answer out there for you. You just got to go and look for it. And like, nobody's hiding the process of how to do things anymore. Like, be it traditional or digital, like, no, it's silly to do that.
Yeah, I gotta commend. I know Jim Lee. He's like one of the best comic book artists out there, and
oh my God, yeah. He I think he does them on the weekends. I subscribe to him on YouTube. He just like, it'll just be like a 3-hour stream of him sketching on a page, like, and it's amazing. Like, and you know, and he'll once in a while he'll teach you how to, you know, he'll show like muscle anatomy and stuff like that for character work, which is, you know, especially for modern comics, like deep for DC and, you know, Marvel, like, you got to have that superhero anatomy nailed down.
Oh yeah,
which is really important. But then again, you know, you have like, I think it was like back in 2007, you had the, I know I have a couple of them. It was Batman Confidential. I don't know if you've ever remember that run. It nope. Was a really, it's good. It what Batman Confidential did, what that series did, was it gave newer artists to the comic book genre a little bit of spotlight time. It showed like the skills of like new artists and stuff like that, and the arc that I had and read was it was like Mad Men and Lovers or something like that. It was more or less basically a young Batman and then a Joker origin story.
Okay.
And the artwork in it I love because it's very, very reminiscent of the German expressionist Egon Schiele, who's one of my favorite artists, like hands down. He's probably like number one. So the art is very, very exaggerated, and the muscle forms and stuff like that on people are not the same as, like, there's this one panel I can remember vividly in my head. I don't remember what the female character's name was, but it's Bruce Wayne and this woman, and they're like entangled in bed, and the way it's drawn, it this is gonna sound terrible, but
okay.
it's kind of drawn shittily, for lack of a better word. I don't know how else to describe it. Like, there's a leg coming out, and I'm like, wait, whose knee is that? Like, it's like underneath the sheet, like they're embraced underneath the sheet, and I'm like, how many legs are there? Like, there's so many kneecaps. I don't know what's popping out of where, but it's a great looking panel. There's like moments where like the inking in it, like, is actually quite awful, if I can call it that. I mean, like, it's bad, but it makes for an exciting panel, you know?
So many kneecaps.
It's good because it's so awful. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah. Like, it's like, obviously the artist had a very very intense style. Like, he had a mission. When the Joker gets his, not to spoil it, because you should read it. I know the Killing Joke is like everybody's like, you know, that's the Joker's origin. I know we all agree on that, but this one is excuse me. It's actually a really good take on, in my opinion, the origin of the Joker. He's kind of just like a nihilistic hitman, and he's almost looking for a reason to die, and it just doesn't happen. He tries, like, it's almost like suicide by cop. Like, he's trying to get somebody else to kill him, and it's his plan's just falling apart. Like, he can't seem to do it right. And when he gets his, you know, disfigurement, there's a moment where, like, he's standing in a mirror, and he's pulling the wound on his face open, and he's like, man, there are just so many teeth in there. And the amount of teeth that he is drawn in his head is just like inhuman. No human has that many teeth in their skull.
Mm-hmm.
But it emphasizes the fact that, like, his face has just been slashed to shit, and he's just opening it, and it's not like he's pulling on this wound, and it's not phasing him. You know, it's pretty wild.
I'll definitely have to read that one. I mean, this is a Batman and Superman podcast. Like, I definitely have to read that now.
Batman Confidential is a lot of one shot storylines. There's one where he teams up with Superman to fight off like a legion of zombies that have been resurrected by a man. I love this, by a man named Herbert Combs.
Herbert Combs, which is a play on
Jeffrey Combs, who played Herbert West in Reanimator.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I love stupid little things like that in comics.
I definitely have to read that. Sounds really cool. I would love to see Superman and Batman team up destroying zombies. That sounds awesome.
Anytime there's like zombies get thrown into play or something like that, like I kind of have to lean back, take a double take and take a look at it.
Oh yeah.
The deceased story arc. I was a big fan of that. I like that one a lot more than like the Marvel Zombies one. I find that DC does like dark stuff like that a little bit better than Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
Like any semblance of like hope, like again, they just yank that out from underneath you. Like right out the gate, and you're like, oh, cool, we're all dead. You just go on reading it with like this pit in your stomach.
What is that part of Batman Confidential too? The Superman Batman zombie team up?
Yeah, it would be under Batman Confidential. Yeah, okay. I don't remember what the story arc was called, but it's the series was Batman Confidential.
Okay, I definitely have to look into this now, for sure. So I wanted to get back to Small Town Thirst. I wanted to ask you, is that game up and running right now? Is that Kickstarter launch? What kind of?
I haven't heard from him recently, but the Kickstarter. I don't even know if the Kickstarter actually launched yet. I don't know if he was still fine tuning things up. I felt bad for the guy. He was like a single dad with like two kids, and who had been like working on and off as like a game designer,
mm-hmm.
Trying to get things going. And like I actually have on my computer a demo of the game. Like I've actually played it. It's a real thing, and it was kind of weird because it's like, oh my god, I'm like playing a game that I made, like I helped make a game. So I don't know if unfortunately he's had to shelf it again to have to focus on other things.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time, like everything he would release with it, it would get pretty good traction over there. So he had brought it to a couple conventions over there. It was selected for some type of contest that they had over there in Denmark. I guess it did fairly well. It was like, but other than like wide stream release, I haven't seen it on like Steam or anything like that yet. So I'm not sure if he's, because again, it was just a demo,
right?
I would like to assume that if it did well enough, he would, you know, hire me back as the artist again to work on the full version of the game. But, you know.
It's like almost like a surreal experience, like playing your own work, like, because you remember what you were going through, like when you drew this specific thing. Or...
Yeah, it was surreal. I remember the first time he sent me a video clip of the, like, some of the first two characters I did, and I was like, I'm like, holy shit, it's a video game. Like, how did you do that? Like, it was very surreal. It was at that moment, like it kind of clicked in my head. I was like, oh my god, I'm actually like working on something. Like, this is a thing. Like, this is a game. Like,
this is a real thing that I'm doing.
It's no longer just like a still drawing on a screen. Like it's moving. Like, you know, because like I was like the way it was designed is like, you know, 2D. So like I would, like when he would ask me to draw, like I need you to draw like the main character punching. I would have to draw the main character's idle stance, and then I would have to have him, you know, draw him cocking the hand back, and then the follow through. So I'm drawing like multiple drawings for just like one thing, and then he's,
I see,
he's animating them. And I'm like, wow, all right. It's surreal to see. Like, I dabbled in animation before, but it's a different thing when you're, it was a different thing when you're really just drawing things with no intent to animate them yourself, and some guys just taking stuff and I had control over it. Like when you sent me the demo, and I'm like, oh my God, like I have control over this. Like that's when it blew me away. I was like, wow, I'm dungeon crawling in a dungeon that like I made that.
That is really cool. You definitely, if there's any like announcement when it's going to be released, definitely let us know, because I would.
You know what? I will have to reach out to him and find out. I'll even I think I've posted about it on my Instagram. He has an Instagram, Small Town. If you can check it out that way as well.
Okay.
See if there's like any progress on there.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. But so I hope he's doing well, because he's a swell guy.
Yeah. I'd definitely be interested in kind of what condition it is, and I would love to play it. Definitely check it out. So we try to ask most of our guests on the show, since this reverting back to Batman and Superman, which character would you go for, Batman or Superman?
You know, when I was younger, I would probably say Batman, just because I like Batman was always darker. Batman stories would sometimes go into the macabre and sometimes like gothic. It was, you know, spooky. Superman, you know, Superman is idealistic. He's the best of everybody, you know. He's very similar to Captain America. He's what everybody should strive to be. He's the best of everybody. That's a really tough one. But you know, at the same time with Batman, you know, he's not this super strong alien. He's a man. He is mortal. He can die.
Right.
And he uses his, you know, thankfully he was born with a genius brain that he can acquire such knowledge as to always have a backup plan. I guess I would say Batman. Huh? Just because at the end of the day, like, he is a person. He can die, but it's his will, I think, that is the most admirable thing about him, is his just unbreakable will.
Yeah, in spirit.
It's almost to his detriment. He's, you know, granted, yes, he's thankfully fighting for the, you know, the side of good, but he's borderline psychotic. Like the villains he faces, he's just putting people in jail. Essentially, he's putting bad people in jail. He has a very distinct line that he will not cross, for better or for worse, you know. But he goes to a point where sometimes, you know, he could be his own worst enemy sometimes.
We actually just watched the Michael Keaton Batman, and I was amazed at how vulnerable he was. You know, he's trying to tell Vicky Vale that he's Batman and he's literally just trying to get the words out. And I'm like, I like that Batman the best. Just because
yeah.
he's so relatable.
See, I don't necessarily disagree with that. See, my thing when it comes to the films is that it's very easy to play Bruce Wayne.
Mm-hmm.
To play that vulnerable person that's trying to tell a secret, to play a cocky billionaire, you know. It's easy to play that. It's harder to play Batman. It's not hard to convince me that you're Bruce Wayne. You need to convince me that you're Batman when you're underneath that mask, because Batman is the real person that you're portraying, or you know, real person, you know, quotes like in heavy quotations, like. Bruce Wayne is the mask.
Right.
Batman is the individual, you know, and that kind of feeds into what I was saying. Like, for as much good as Batman does, he is just as crazy as the people he puts in Arkham. Like he's you dress like a bat, you're a crazy person.
Oh yeah.
That's what crazy people do, you know.
He's riding that really thin line of kind of going over the edge and becoming the enemy that he fights.
And it's just the line of killing, you know. Which is kind of funny to bring up, like the deceased storyline. Like there's a scene where like Alfred's in the Batcave with a shotgun. And I'm like, yeah, I don't think Bruce would have allowed that.
Right. Yeah. I've seen some different comment interpretations where, yeah, Alfred has a shotgun. I guess it's his only resort. That's the only way Alfred can defend himself and the Bat.
Yeah. Yeah.
It makes sense for him, for his standpoint, but I'm sure Bruce would decide against it, but what else Alfred yeah. really do, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Poor Alfred.
Yeah. No, we love both the characters. We just want to get, you know, it's fun to get some insight on everyone else thinks.
Well, absolutely. You know, I, as I get older, I'll reread comics and I'll fall in love with characters that I never thought I'd really care for, like Green Lantern, for example. I never cared for Green Lantern, you know, younger, but I kind of like him now. Green Arrow, same thing with him. A really good example. I know you guys primarily do, you know, Batman, Superman, Hawkeye. My best friend loves Hawkeye. I used to just fart on Hawkeye, like, yeah. Fuck that guy. As I've gotten older, like Hawkeye is great. Like that, he's a great character. Like I've completely 180'd on Hawkeye. Like completely 180'd on him.
Yeah, I haven't really read much of the source material on Hawkeye, but like he's definitely the most human and relatable in the Avenger films. Like he has a family, you know, he's more of a guy, and that's what I like about him, you know.
I would agree with that. I think you know, it's a little different when you read it in comic books, and then when you have like a movie that's a little, I know it's not actually tangible, when there's like an actual person playing them, you can relate to that more. And yeah, he's it, like in Age of Ultron when he's talking to Scarlet Witch, he's just like, I'm just a dude with a bow and arrow. None of it makes sense, like none of it. And but I'm gonna go out there and I'm gonna fight these stupid robots,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
because that's my job, you know. I think that actually may have been the moment that, like, I 180'd on him.
Yeah,
and I was like, Yeah. You're just a dude, but you're gonna go do your damn best, and I think that's what a lot of comic books boil down to.
Yeah, I haven't read a lot of Marvel comic books. I've read a few Spider-Man comic books back in middle school, high school, but it's been a while since I dabbled in the Marvel comic books, but. I know there's definitely some stories I have to read, but it's just kind of hard to kind of weed out where to start. That's kind of what intimidates most people, I would say, about comic books, because you start reading and then like right when you're in the middle of everything, a new universe starts. And you're like, oh well, how do I catch up? I'm not even done with this storyline.
When it comes to Marvel, I would probably say, unless you've already read it, a good jumping off point would probably be the original Civil War storyline. I would probably say that one story arc really hooked me into Marvel Comics. Start with that. Don't get find the trade paperbacks that are all just straight up Civil War, not like the tie-in books and stuff that. Just start with the main arc and then get the tie-in books. But that's just a solid story.
Yeah, I'll definitely have to check that out. Thanks for the recommendation. I there's definitely a lot of Marvel stuff. I have to catch up on, and even DC stuff. Like I was actively reading the New 52, and then they started Rebirth, and then I got overwhelmed.
Yeah, I'm impatient when it comes to comic books. Mm-hmm. I have a hard time, waiting to collect, single issues and stuff like that. So, to most things in my life, I'm late to everything. So I would usually wait till the trade paperback came out. That way, I had a full, concise story I could read from start to finish.
I usually wait for the graphic novels to come out.
Because I go through my boxes and I have loads and loads of single issues that just suddenly stop, and then it's just the graphic novel, so I essentially have doubles of everything.
Well, it's good to, have more than one copy just in case, you want to write on one or, do something to one of them. Then you have another copy to kind of, keep.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that. I going through the some of my books recently, I brought it up to my wife. I went out into the living room with a stack in my hand. I'm like, do you know what I'm holding in my hand? She's like, no. And I'm like, I apparently collected all 28 issues of the original Beavis and Butthead Marvel Comics that I didn't even intend to do. I just picked them up here and there at comic book shops, if they were in the 25 cent bin. A good chunk of them, no lie, I found at a gun show.
Wow.
Found them there, and then I was sorting through them because a lot of the covers kind of look the same. I've got three copies of issue one, and then I have just all 28. And I'm like, okay, apparently I collected the entire series. I didn't know that. Never intended to. Never planned on it. Just kind of happened.
What did your wife say to that?
Oh, she loved it. We're huge Beavis and Butthead fans. The first Comic Con we went to, she specifically wanted to go. Because Mike Judge was there. So this was back in 2011 or 2012. It was right when they were bringing back Beavis and Butthead on MTV for one really short season. And Mike Judge had a panel because she's actually a huge King of the Hill fan. So I was like, all right, let's go to that.
Yeah, it'd be really cool to see. That would be a cool panel.
Yeah, Luke Wilson was there for some reason. It was weird.
Oh, really? Huh.
Yeah, I mean, the only connection from that is Idiocracy, but it was a strictly Beavis and Butthead panel.
Yeah, I guess he was just there just to kind of support his friend, I guess.
I guess they're bros. I don't know. But that was a good one.
Yeah. Well, we're actually running out of time. I just wanted to ask you few questions, and then we'll do a wrap up.
Yeah, sure.
It's been awesome. You know, we definitely would love.
Oh no, this has been fantastic.
Yeah, this was pretty smooth. I enjoyed this a lot. Yeah.
And we tell everybody who's been on the show, but we sincerely mean it. You know, if you have anything you want to promote, if you want to come on and talk about anything, even just for like, you know, 15 minutes, you have a brief thing. If you want to come on again and do a full episode, you know, please reach out to us. We would love to have you on again.
Absolutely.
Yeah, this was great. Yeah. Yeah, we just wanted to, you know, have you kind of like, you know, do you have like your social media pages? Do you you just kind of like, you know, where can the audience find you if they're interested in SK Illustrations?
You can find me on Instagram at SK Illustrations. I post a lot of work there. I post a lot of non-work there too. I'm also on Twitter at SK Illustrations, SK _ Illustrations. I also have an Etsy shop that you can purchase stuff at, which is linked in my my Instagram. If you have anything that you want, you know, permission to draw, you can feel free to reach out for me through you know, a DM on Instagram, or you can email me at steveK.illustrations@gmail.com. Other than that, right now, because of what's going on, you know, I'm just primarily working on more new stuff to hopefully unload onto my Etsy store and for conventions.
Yeah, I got to say, that with you know, your artwork, I love that Howard the Duck illustration that you did. I just found that so funny that you literally just made it a duck with a suit on. You know, and more people would make it more like a, you know, kind of more humanized. And I like how you just made it just a
duck. Yeah, like. What am I gonna do with a duck? He's a duck. I always look up things to see what people have done with them, because, you know, I don't want to just draw the, you know, same old thing in the same old pose like every other person. Mm-hmm. And I see a lot of people just, you know, drawing like you know, a rude Howard the Duck with like a gun, smoking a cigar, and I was just like still looking like the quintessential Howard the Duck that we all know. And I'm like, I'm just going to draw a duck.
That's what I loved about it. It was just like plain and simple to the point. There's a duck with a cigar in its mouth and a little suit and a cat.
And it also gave me an opportunity to try, and do it in a different style. Like, granted, this is where that traditional phrase comes in. Granted, it's, you know, I did it digitally. Like, everything was done in a very dry brush fashion. Like, it's very messy. I wanted it to look painterly and very simplistic, and, you know, like a very like a painting of a duck, but not too refined, you know.
Right.
I just love his expression.
or lack of, because he's a duck with a cigar.
Here I am.
Yeah, no, remember, when I saw that, it instantly made me laugh. I love that. That was awesome.
And that's what it boils down to. Like, if I can make a person laugh with something, or, you know, if it gets 15 likes and 15 people really laughed at it, I made 15 people laugh.
Right.
And, you know.
Right. Yeah. I definitely want to get a commission from you in the future. We've been working on this ghost kind of Ghostbusters-esque kind of mini series. I would love to get your interpretation of one of our episodes. It's an ongoing thing. We only have one episode out right now, so we're in the works of getting one of them in the
future. Absolutely. Email me the details, and, you know, we can figure it out from there. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Yeah. I would love to work with you. That would be really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So we just got a little outro to do, and we try to incorporate them into the outro as well.
Sure.
This was Josh from Bat Yard's Finest sending you off up, up, and away until next Bat Yard's Finest episode.
Becoming super friends one at a time.
We can redo it if you want.
No, it's fine. I'm satisfied if you're satisfied.
Cool. That's good with me. That, well, like we said, we'd love to have you back on the show. It seems like we could talk for hours, you know.
Yeah, anytime.